Explode your to-be-read pile with the New Release Index, your new best friend for finding the best new books. Curated by the book nerds here at Book Riot, it will help you keep track of the upcoming books we think should be on your radar. You can filter by genre, what's trending among other subscribers, and save books to your own watch list. And you can check out the demo at bookriot.com/new-releases. That's bookriot.com/new-releases. Happy browsing!
Welcome to Red or Dead, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk about the world of mysteries and thrillers. This is episode 158, and we are recording on Tuesday, July 25th. I'm Katie McLean Horner, along with Kendra Winchester, and we are coming to you from Book Riot. Hi, Kendra. How are you doing today?
Hello. I'm doing all right. Roasting down here in the humidity that is South Carolina. How are you doing?
Well, it was pretty warm today, but I am freezing my tuchus off in this little office in our apartment, which is like, our air conditioning is sporadic, although it did get a lot better after they replaced our air conditioner last August. But I'm in the little office where I podcast, and it is, to quote Dr. Evil from Austin Powers, it's frickin' freezing in here, Mr. Bigglesworth. So I've got like a sweatshirt and slippers on, and I am just like, this is ridiculous. I mean, wonders of modern technology and indoor living and stuff, but it's a little odd.
That I grew up with us having a cold house. And because a lot of the people in my house ran hot. And then when I got older, I started running cold. But I still like a nice, you know, sweatshirt on or something like that. So
it is cozy. And I will say, you know, I prefer being cold over hot because you can always add more layers. And there is something very snug about, you know, sweatshirt and stuff like that. But yeah, the discrepancy between me walking out of the apartment this morning to go to work and just being hit in the face full blast with humidity and like almost 90 degree temperatures at 9:30 in the morning. I'm just like, ugh. Yeah, it's odd. And my internal temperature regulation is very confused. But how are the corgis doing with all of their floof in the heat?
Oh my goodness. So this is the time between their birthdays that I call the dog days of summer. And so they are inside and they just look like little loafs hanging out on the wood flooring. I recently bought some cushions for them to wallow on from Target. They were having a sale. And so I got these like gorgeous little cushions, but they're like, no, we do not want these. We want the floor. It is hot. And so they just lay there and look miserable. And they're like, just change the weather. Change the weather, Mom.
Oh my gosh. When our air conditioner went out, which was a day before we were supposed to go on vacation in the beginning of August, last year, it was awful. And our maintenance people in our apartment, for our apartment complex, they were like, well, we can't get another air conditioner in until next week. Do you need one since you're not going to be here? We're like, we have cats. Are you kidding me? Yes. Yes, we need an air. And they just kind of looked at us. We're like, oh, come on. We're like, we cannot leave these cats. It's over 90 degrees outside. We can't leave them in here. And so we told our pet sitter, we were just like, just a heads up, you know, and she was just like, yeah, they're hot. They're both like just laying on the floor next to each other, which they don't usually do. And so I'm like, oh. So, yeah. I appreciate warmer weather. The older I get, the more I appreciate it. But it's like, I can appreciate it from afar. I don't like to be out in it. I just like knowing that it is out there if I do want to go out and get warm.
The idea is nice.
The idea is nice. Exactly.
But, well, we have a lot of news this, you know, this week, which sometimes it can be a slow time, but I feel like we're ramping up for award season here shortly. So there's all sorts of things going on.
Yeah. Before we get into that, let's go ahead and take a quick pause for our first sponsor.
Explode your to-be-read pile with the New Release Index, your new best friend for finding the best new books. Curated by the book nerds here at Book Riot, it will help you keep track of the upcoming books we think should be on your radar. You can filter by genre, what's trending among other subscribers, and save books to your own watch list. And you can check out the demo at bookriot.com/new-releases. That's bookriot.com/new-releases. Happy browsing.
All right. So if you are a new listener, welcome. We are delighted to have you. And if you are a longtime listener, welcome back. We are so excited that you continue to listen to us every episode. And like we said at the top of the show, we talk about mystery and suspense and true crime and just about anything that falls under that ginormous umbrella. So whether you are looking for discussions of subgenres in the mystery and suspense world, author read-alikes, movie adaptations, award news, if it's mysterious and suspenseful, it is probably fair game for us to talk about. So this is the part of the show where we always put out a call to our lovely listeners to let us know if you have any show suggestions for upcoming episodes. We really do use these to plan out future episodes. They are a great way for us to know what you, the listeners, would like to hear more of. It's a great way for us to expand our own reading horizons. And yeah, it's just been a really great setup. We've gotten so many fantastic suggestions from the listeners. So we really do read them and appreciate them. So if you have any ideas or show suggestions, you can shoot us an email or reach out to us via social media. We're going to have all of our contact information at the end of the show and in the show notes. So don't worry about getting it down right now. We just like to get those creative juices flowing while you listen. And even if you don't have an idea and you just want to say hi, there is nothing that we love more than hearing from our listeners. It makes us so happy to hear from people when they let us know how much they enjoy listening to the show. So thank you for those of you who have sent us messages before. And if you enjoyed this podcast, definitely leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts so that other people can find us. All right. And then real quickly, we have, as always, wanted to remind you that Book Riot has a new podcast out, just adding to the list. So if you are interested in just a huge variety of different awesome bookish things, whether it's, you know, author interviews or just other aspects of this wide bookish world, you will want to take a listen to First Edition, where Book Riot co-founder Jeff O'Neill explores all of these different aspects and talks to authors such as S.A. Cosby, Khaled Hosseini, Sarah Bakewell. And it's just a really, really interesting podcast. And Kendra, you've said before you have you've done an episode of First Edition, haven't you?
Yes, I was on to talk about audiobooks and particularly trying to talk about audiobooks and reframing it to center disabled people who use audiobooks, which is why audiobooks were invented in the first place, and just kind of shift the way that folks think about audiobooks, which now are enjoyed by everyone. So it was really great to talk to Jeff about that. I've been a longtime listener of the Book Riot main podcast that he and Rebecca host. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
All right. So we will have a link to that in the show notes. But to subscribe, just search First Edition in your podcast player of choice and it should pop right up. All right. So with that, why don't you take us away with some of this award news?
Yes. So the Shirley Jackson Awards were announced. And for those who don't know, the Shirley Jackson Awards were established for outstanding achievement in the literature of psychological suspense, horror, and the dark fantastic. And of course, all of this will be linked in the show notes. But Jeff Vandermeer, the wonder that is Jeff Vandermeer, and his wife, arguably even more fabulous as a editor of Fantasy, they were there to host the awards ceremony. I was able to attend a reading with Charlie Jane Anders that they were kind of hosting for this camp that they did in Spartanburg before the pandemic. And so they are really fabulous together. So they were perfect choices. And then the winners were announced, and the novel, which arguably is the most popular category, was actually a tie this year, which was really cool. The Devil Takes You Home by Gabino Iglesias from Mulholland Books, and Where I End by Sophie White from Tramp Press tied and won the novel category.
Yeah, and what's also noteworthy about this, and the reason why this came to my attention in the first place, is that this award was handed out shortly after The Devil Takes You Home won the best novel for the Bram Stoker Awards for horror. And so I follow Gabino Iglesias on Twitter, or X, or whatever they're calling it now. I don't even know. Anyway, I follow him on Twitter, and he's a really cool author to follow on Twitter. Highly recommend you do so if you are still on if you're still on the website. But I just thought that was really, really cool. The novel has been nominated for, it was nominated for Best Novel for the Edgars. It's just, it's been nominated for so many things this year. So to win the Bram Stoker Award and then the Shirley Jackson Award is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it's been really great to see these different books and win and like have more of a spotlight put on them. The other categories are novella, novelette, short fiction, single author collection, and edited anthology. So you can find all of the award winners again linked in the show notes. And I think you have more news that we have on our list here.
Yes, so this is an unusual piece of news. So if you've been following the news at all for the last couple of weeks, you may have seen items about the Long Island serial killer possibly being caught, or the Gilgo Beach serial killer. And this was a, what they were talking about was there was a series of murders that happened not very long ago, like a decade ago, like 2010, 2011. That happened on Long Island. There were several women that they believed were killed, and that this was the work of a single person. But there were a lot of things happening with this case. And one of the big things was that these women were all sex workers, and so the assumption was initially, and I think for a while, that they were killed by a client, but not necessarily the same person. And so there was a lot of effort to kind of start putting some stuff together and think this might be the work of one person. But the reason when this came to my attention, my first thought was, oh my gosh, I have read the book about this, and I 100% have. If any of you have read the book, the true crime book, The Lost Girls, an Unsolved American Mystery by Robert Kolker, he writes about these women, their murders, and that they've gone, the fact that they've, you know, that they had gone unsolved. And it was a really tremendous book. I listened to it on audio. It's fantastic. And he did a really great job of focusing the story on the women, on their families, on the people impacted by their murders. And, you know, kind of looking at the investigation, but how this was impacted by the fact that these women were sex workers. And so there wasn't necessarily a whole lot of attention or a whole lot of interest in trying to, you know, figure out what happened to them. And the book stuck with me just a tremendous amount. And I listened to it maybe 8 years ago at this point. And periodically, I would still think about that book and be like, oh my gosh, this happened like a decade ago and they never caught the guy. So a couple weeks ago, my husband sent me a link saying, hey, this is true crime. This is up your alley. And I was looking and I went, oh my God, I read this. Like, you know, and I'm like, they caught him. Or I mean, I believe he has pled not guilty. I can't remember all of the developments that have happened. The person who they've taken in has not admitted to anything, but now there are possibilities that he may be linked to the murders of other women in the area. And I was just like, oh my gosh, they caught him. It's kind of like when they, shortly after Michelle McNamara's book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, was published, and then they caught the Golden State serial killer. It's surreal to like have read about it, and it's like, this is not fiction. This is true crime. This is nonfiction, and then have it, and then kind of see it play out in real time is astonishing, and obviously nothing can bring back these women that were killed. They can't be brought back. Their families can't be healed. But I'm hoping that if they're able to come to some kind of a conclusion, that there's some kind of closure for them. But yeah, this was just bonkers, and I had read the book. Kendra, have you seen, like, has this crossed your radar? Like, have you read the book? And like, I'm interested to know what, like, people who are not me, what their reactions are.
Well, I missed the book because I was in, I want to say grad school maybe when the book came out, so I was only reading for school, so I feel like I definitely missed the boat on that one. But it's really interesting to see that happen. I feel like there's been a big conversation about true crime recently. Like, I feel like that's a recurring theme for this year that you and I have talked about, is like,
yeah,
rethinking the way that we consume as readers, the way that we consume true crime. And I feel like this is definitely in that vein as well.
Yeah, it's very much, this is one of those cases that I think that kind of forces people to kind of consider those types of things. The other thing that I also remembered is that the story was made into a Netflix series. I can't remember if it was called The Lost Girls or not. I believe it was a dramatized version of the story. So it wasn't like a documentary, but when I told my friends about it, one of them was like, oh my gosh, I've seen the show. So that the story has played out in a few different areas. So we'll have a link to, there's a New York Times article from a few days ago that kind of gives an overview of like what the search was like for this man and, events leading up to it. Is it possible they could have found him earlier? But there are so many articles being published right now, and it keeps popping up on all of my news feeds because the algorithms have figured me out pretty well. But yeah, it's terrifying. It's chilling, but it's also, this is a big deal. So yeah, it was definitely something that when I first saw it, I'm like, well, we're going to be talking about this on the podcast. So yeah, lots of stuff to read about and to consider with that. All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and jump into our main segment, and talk about literary crime fiction. And as I feel is often the case, Kendra, you were the one who posed this suggestion when we were coming up with ideas. What made this topic kind of pop into your head?
Well, one of the things that I enjoy about our discussions is talking about the genre of mystery thrillers, horror, suspense, and like, what is genre? Those big questions. And I often see critics kind of be a little snobby about air quotes genre fiction, but there are so many literary novels that actually are, in a sense, crime fiction. I feel like the boundaries of genre are disappearing a lot in the literary world, which I love to see. I've seen everything from like literary romance to like nonfiction novels, which kind of makes my brain implode. But in that vein, I love to push the boundary. So I was like, well, why not do like literary crime fiction and see what happens?
Yeah, I always find it interesting to see how, yeah, how genres can blend together, how you can kind of like take them apart and put them back together again. And yeah, there is always this tension, so to speak, between like you say, genre fiction, and I'm putting in kind of sarcastic air quotes, and literary fiction. Like, there's a huge difference. And I will argue, you know, genre fiction, like true genre fiction, I think really plays to specific tropes and characters and, you know, just kind of expected elements that you expect to see, basically. And, you know, they may play with them a little bit, and there are different ways that you can subvert them, but they still kind of stay within the boundaries. And when you talk about literary crime fiction, it's like the focus is not so much on those tropes. It's kind of using the crime or whatever as a jumping off point for other topics, other discussions, or, you know, using that as the story springboard, but the focus is really on, you know, the characters' relationships or the language or something unusual with the structure. It just feels more unbound. And some, I think, is more experimental than others. But yeah, when you mentioned it, I was going through in my head, and now I really like, you know, a lot of my favorite books, I would say, are probably, you know, more squarely in a genre mold than necessarily literary crime fiction. But I was still going through my head. I was like, oh yeah, I like that one and that one and that one. I'm like, oh yeah, these would all, I would consider to be literary crime fiction. Yeah, even though, yeah, like I said, the literary part is much, much harder to define.
And I think as long, honestly, as people are enjoying the books, that's for me, the most important part, that people are being able to read these books and have fun with them. And I always find it interesting to try new things as well. So if you're literary and you enjoy these, then you can head over more towards crime fiction. Or if you're a crime fiction suspense, et cetera, person, and you're enjoying these, maybe you could go over more to the literary books and see what happens. And I think exploring new genres, new categories, new types of books can be really exciting. And finding these like genre benders or these books that blend the genres are a great, great way to like start that process.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, just for me as a librarian, on the one hand, when I talk about books with other people, I'm always looking for different like connections and pathways to different genres or different topics that they, subjects that they may find interesting, to make different recommendations. But at the same time, there is a part of me that very, very much likes putting stuff in their categories. And there are sometimes when I order a book for the fiction collection and then I have to figure out what genre sticker to assign it, because we only assign them one genre sticker. And I'm looking at this going, I'm like, there's like three genres in here. How am I supposed to pick this? And I'm like, no, this is really cool. It's innovative. But the orderly part of my librarian mind is going, gosh darn it. I'm like, this is
the most library thing to say.
Yes, it really is. Yeah, it's not always a huge part of my brain that craves that kind of like neat order, but there is a small but loud part of that. And so I'm going back and forth and I'm reading and I'm like, all right, well, which one is it leaning more towards? And so I'm like, historical horror fantasy? What is going on here? But yeah, so, and I will say, you know, you talk about like literary fiction readers maybe gearing, finding more books in more crime fiction, or crime fiction readers finding more literary fiction. I definitely consider myself to be more of a crime fiction reader that may find themselves branching out into literary fiction, because usually literary fiction is not my cup of tea. I need something a little bit, not more structured, but like a lot of literary fiction can feel, you know, slice of life. And I'm like, no, I need a little bit more in there. But The books that I picked for this one have both blown me away. So yeah, I am very glad that you picked this topic. And as usual, I'm the one kind of yammering on. So do you want to kick us off?
Yes. So I chose a book that was on a list that we talked about, I believe last time, or maybe it was the time before, about some of the best crime novels of the year. And it was on Crime Reads. I can't remember if it was one of the top 10 or if it was on that extended list, but I picked up Burnham Wood by Eleanor Catton. And you might remember, dear listener, that Eleanor Catton back in 2013 won the Man Booker Prize, as it was known then, and she was the youngest person at 28, and it was also the longest novel that had ever won the award. So now she's back 10 years later with a new novel, and it is so different from The Luminaries, her debut. Burnham Wood is about this nonprofit in New Zealand. And so you have Mira and a bunch of other white middle-class 20-somethings discussing philosophies around class, colonialism and capitalism and all these different things. And it really is poking fun a bit at middle-class white people still trying to be the heroes of marginalized communities. And so what this nonprofit does is I'm sorry, the whole nonprofit is a really funny idea. So I'm really struggling to give this summary with a straight face. So Burnham Wood, they're about equal access to land and food and stuff. And so they sneak around on rich people's properties and plant little gardens. And they plant these little gardens as a way to take back the land from these rich people who don't really need it. But they're not very good at it, it seems like. So they're always growing these seedlings in their house. Anyway, it's fantastic if you like conversation about that. But the crime itself is actually a huge spoiler. It happens, I think, a third of the way through the book or something. And so someone really important who owns a lot of land that they may or may not be trying to grow things on dies. And there is a cover up that is attempted. I think the big part of this is not just a person who is killed by another person. That's not just the crime in this book. The crime is also illegally going onto people's lands and starting gardens. And it really, right? That is the crime. That's the big crime of this book.
I thought you were going to say something injustice or, equal access. Is it no? Stealing onto people's land and planting gardens. That sounds like a crime that some of my coworkers might might find themselves doing.
It's really interesting because it really looks at it's like a book of conversations of millennials in the nonprofit sector. If you've worked in the nonprofit sector or have even been adjacent, you know how wild it can get. And so they're looking for funding, but they're trying to prove that they can actually do what their thing, their whole organization is trying to do. And they kind of fail miserably. I feel like a lot of people really enjoy the intellectual conversations going on in this book. Or you might be like me and just laugh your way through it because it's so ridiculous. I can't take them seriously. Maybe it's because I'm a working class Appalachian person, but it's really funny to watch all of them do this in this context. And there's some really – it's really clever in a lot of ways. I really appreciate what Eleanor Catton is doing. And it's definitely a completely different feel from The Luminaries, but I think that shows her range. And so if you are wondering whether or not to pick up this book, I think it is really fascinating. The characters are all terrible in so many wonderful ways. I mean – It's great. And also it's
those subversive gardeners.
I know, right? Subversive gardeners. That's also a great title.
And a band name.
My spouse was like, oh, Burnham Wood. that's like Shakespeare. And I was like, what? And he's like, did you not know? I was like, no, I only took early Shakespeare, Samuel. And so it also was a reference to Shakespeare. So if you are familiar with Shakespeare, you'll also enjoy this. I feel like there are so many layers to this book. I really enjoyed reading it. I played Zelda while I was reading it, and I ran around like harvesting random things, like farming. It's called farming and gaming. Anyway, so I would recommend this book. I could talk about it for ages, but I will spare you. But please email us if you would like to talk about Burnham Wood. I'm desperate to have someone to talk to about it with. So definitely check out Burnham Wood by Eleanor Catton. I'm so sorry for taking up so much time talking about this wild book about subversive gardening. That would be a show title if we did funny show titles.
Yes, subversive gardening. And if you take that for a band name, make sure to credit
us. Yes, please. And we'll take free tickets as well. Thank you.
All right. Let's go ahead and take a pause for our second sponsor. All right. So my first pick, unfortunately, is not humorous at all. It is actually on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. But I loved this book so much. So my first pick is Notes on an Execution by Danya Kukavka. And this book won Best Novel at the Edgar Awards this year. And it was one that had been on my radar when it first came out because of how it, you know, how it kind of deconstructed how we talk about crime and true crime, even though it's a fictional book. And I decided, I'm like, you know, this is the perfect book to read for this episode. And I was right. I read this book in a couple of long sittings. It's not, the book itself is not very long, but it just like ripped my heart out and gutted me with how amazing it is. And oh my gosh. And so I immediately hopped onto Twitter and tweeted at the author. I was just like, yeah, your book just stomped on my heart and I loved it. So if you are not familiar with the book or haven't heard us mention it in previous episodes, the story is technically, or it's centered around Ansel Packer, who is a convicted serial killer who is scheduled to be executed in 12 hours. And he knows the crimes that he's committed. He's awaiting his execution. And so he obviously does not want to die. He is upset and frustrated because he doesn't feel like he's been understood. And the idea of like, okay, serial killer on death row, like that in and of itself isn't unusual, but we don't get most of Ansel's story from him. We piece together his story from the perspectives of three women in his life or orbit, however you want to call it. There is his mother, who abandoned him and his baby brother when she was young in order to escape an abusive marriage. There's Hazel, who is the twin sister of Ansel's ex-wife. And then there is Safi, who is a homicide detective who thinks that he murdered a trio of girls maybe 10 years ago, but she can't prove it. But the reason why she suspects that in part is because she and Ansel spent time in the same foster house. And so she knows him and has seen some of his, you know, seen what he was like growing up and seen some of his tendencies. And so now that she's a homicide detective, she's like, I might be able to bring some justice. And so the story is told in alternating chapters between those three women from different years. And in between their chapters, it's interspersed with Ansel's perspective as he gets closer and closer to his execution date. So this book, it's not a mystery. We know he did it. There's a little bit of a mystery as to the whys, but or the kind of the complexities of what drove him to kill them, but it's not the crux of the story. It's really these women's lives and how they have been affected by his actions. And that's the story that the book is trying to tell. Like, how the death of these three girls, Ansel's actions, how it has this kind of rippling radius, and it's, you know, how his actions affect so many other people. And ultimately, his question or his concern is he wants to be understood. In his sections, he talks about how it's not a manifesto, what does he call it? His thesis, I think. And he just has these pages and pages of writing about, you know, how the world works and how the universe works. It's very philosophical. And he was like, this explains everything. And when you think about how we talk about and how we, you know, how we focus on serial killers, you know, the focus is on the person who committed the actions, usually male, and they kind of become this anti-hero that everyone is obsessed with. They want to know what drove this person, but they don't, you know, the same attention isn't given to the people who are affected by his crimes, whose lives have been changed by his, you know, by his actions. And there's a real, I don't have the exact quote, but towards the end of the story, there's something about how they're referred to as the girls who he killed. And they're no longer, you know, individual people with their own, you know, what might have happened if he hadn't killed them, what might their lives have been like. They are, and their identities will forever be tied to him. They're his now. Like, they only exist in connection with him. And the story, the characters were so compelling. Like, this was just a book, even though it's not an action-packed story, I just could not put it down. I was just tearing through the pages, reading about these women that were just so exquisitely written and, you know, so complex. And it just, by the end of the book, even, you know, there's no big twists or anything, it just, you know, it just breaks your heart about just how, you know. And then you start thinking about, you know, the prison system. And then, you know, by the end of it, like, you're thinking about these women who were affected, these women who were murdered, and you're like, what, you know, what was the point of all of this? You know, what it, oh my gosh, there are just so many emotions and thoughts that come up with this book. And it's just so beautifully done. Like, I finished it and I was just like falling over myself, just going, oh my God, this book is amazing. Like, I 100% see how this won best novel at the Eggers. Like, this book was just incredible. And now I'm rambling. So I'm going to take a breather. And I know we've talked about this book before, and I can't remember. Have you read this one
yet? I have not. But while you were talking, I looked it up and found it on Hoopla on audio. So
yes.
Hey, that.
Yeah, it's just, oh my gosh, so good. The way the different perspectives were just layered on top of each other to create this picture. Like, it was just masterful. Absolutely masterful. I loved it. This is, even though it came out last year, this is probably going to be one of the best books I read all year. And that is Notes on an Execution by Danya Kukavka.
My next pick is also, I'm definitely a serious a book, and that is A Shelter by Jung Yoon. This is Jung Yoon's debut novel. This book is very special to me in that it was the very first winner of the Reading Women Award for Fiction. And the last year of Reading Women, Jung Yoon's second book came out, and I was able to interview her for that. And so it was just a very important, I don't know, it's a landmark book for me in my bookish media, I don't know, freelance career, whatever that you would call it. But it is a literary thriller suspense book. And just as a heads up, there is discussion of sexual assault of women in the book. It's pretty descriptive, so just as a heads up. But it starts out with Kyung, who is a Korean-American guy, and he is really struggling to like keep his family in the middle class. He grew up with affluent parents, and they just live a few miles away in this very affluent part of their town. Kyung just can't really afford his house anymore. So he's, you know, the realtor is going through their house, like deciding how they're going to set it up to show the house to get it sold. And Kyung turns around and he sees his mother naked standing in the backyard. And you go from there, you figure out, you know, fairly early on that his parents have been held in the house. And I won't give any more details, but it's pretty grim. And it's really how Kyung is trying to balance having, you know, having parents who are trying to make the best life for him, but he is like pushing, he feels trapped by his parents' expectations, but his life isn't going well either. So you have all these different parts that are balancing, and Kyung really is just scrabbling to make his life work. It's a very character-focused story, but it's so intimate and so just well done. It's just a well-crafted book, and I feel like it's a quiet book even with everything going on, but I feel like that just shows Jung Yoon's skill, and I just admire her work so much. Have you read this book?
No, but while you were talking about it, I looked it up because I was trying to, a lot of times if I'm like, that book sounds familiar, but I can't recall it, I look up the cover and go, oh, that one. Yes. So I do recognize the cover, but it looks like, yeah, it was, looks like it was published like, what, maybe 2016? Yeah. Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that probably would, I probably missed it when it first came out, but the cover looks familiar. So I'm like, yeah, the synopsis sounds familiar. And yeah, I think the part where you said his mother is outside naked, I'm like, ah, yeah, that book.
Yes. It has those images that stay in your mind for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds really fascinating, especially, yeah, the idea of like, I've always found books that talk about family and like parents, parental expectations, that type of thing. That type of stuff has always fascinated me.
And I think that this is speaking something that millennials are experiencing, is like, we are the first generation that is more likely to be less well off than our parents. Like, we're not like continuing the cycle of like maintaining wealth or whatever it is. You know, we're not able to buy houses. We're not able to do so many different things. Obviously, no one's able to live on a single income as a millennial. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is, the themes of this book really speak to the millennial generation. And when it came out, you know, a lot of millennials were just heading into 30. So I feel like this is something, I don't know, it's a very, she observes people very well. She's very perceptive. So definitely check out Shelter by Jung Yoon.
All right. And I realized with my second pick, I was like, oh, I could have used this one to lead off with, to kind of mirror some of the comedic qualities from your first pick. But I haven't finished this one yet, so that's why I put it at second. But anyway, my second pick is The Bandit Queens by Perini Schroff. And this was this is a debut novel that came out like right at the beginning of this year. And the main character is Gita, and she, 5 years ago, her husband disappeared. Everyone in her village, this takes place in India, everyone in her village thinks that she killed him. She didn't, but she hasn't really done a whole lot to dissuade everyone from that opinion. A big part of it is because she's like, people are going to gossip. It's not going to make a difference. But also because she's kind of like, you know what? I kind of like being left alone. And people are like afraid of her. They think that she poisoned him and that she's a witch or something similar, and that she's going to bring bad luck upon anyone who crosses her. So people are like, you know, that like they buy from her small jewelry business because they're afraid if they don't that she's going to curse them and stuff. She's like, eh, we'll just let him think I did. Unfortunately, at the beginning of the book, someone in her acquaintances circle, they're not friends, but someone in her acquaintances circle comes to her and says, can you kill my husband like you killed your husband? And Geeta's like, what? This other woman's husband, and there's description of abuse towards women. It's not, well, at least in the first half of the book that I've read, it's all off page. It isn't described in the moment. So she's like, well, you killed your husband. Can you help me kill mine? He's abusing me. He's abusing my children. And Geeta's like, oh, I didn't kill him. Or, you know, I didn't kill my husband. But she's like, I don't, you know, like, she hasn't been making, you know, a big proclamation that she didn't kill her husband. And so she's like, you know, and she knows that this woman is being abused. And she's like, you know, if he's going after her children, this woman's children, she's just like, is this the morally right thing to do? So she embarks on a quest to help this woman murder her husband. And then other people in the village start to find out and start asking, or not find out, like, not everyone, it's not like everyone in the village knows that, but people in their acquaintances circle are like, hey, can you help me murder my husband? And it kind of spirals from there. So, like I said, I have not finished the book. I have, however, read half of it in basically a single sitting starting this afternoon. I cannot describe how much I love this book. It is like, it's deep, it's nuanced, it's funny, it's charming, it's dark. It's like all of these things wrapped into this very intriguing story. And the title of the book, The Bandit Queen, comes from this woman. I can't remember if she's from their village or just like this woman that kind of exists almost like in their mythology, except she was born a few decades previously and was subjected to torture and sexual assault. And she got revenge on the men who subjected her to it. She just came in and wiped them all out. And she kind of like established a name and a reputation for herself. And so Geeta is kind of using her as like an inspiration, a role model. That woman is known as the Bandit Queen. And then Geeta also ends up taking in this sick and abused dog who becomes a very loving dog, and she names him Bandit, and it's adorable. But there's so much going on here, and so yes, there are crimes. There are these women that are plotting multiple murders, and you know there are the very real crimes against women that are not taken. You know, that in their, you know, in their country, in their culture, are not taken seriously. You know, it's part of the, well, you know, that's part of running a, you know, that's part of, you know, having a family or being married. And Geeta, her husband who disappeared, he also was abusive towards her. So she has that past as well. But the focus of the story is really on the characters and their relationships with each other, Geeta's relationship with the other people in the village. And it is a very character-driven story. But there's a lot of heart. There's a lot of dark humor. It's just so entertaining. And yeah, I got like about to the halfway point And I like this evening, as you know, I was like finishing dinner. I'm like, okay, I have to update the show notes document for the show, but I really want to keep reading this book. So like I had some difficult choices to make. Of course, I did the show notes because those need to be updated. But it's so good. And like, yeah, this is another one that I am just like, again, even though I'm only like halfway through, I am just falling over myself about how much I am enjoying this story.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you like relationship driven fiction, or if you like darkly humorous type of stories, this one is so up your alley. Like, it's just not even funny. And again, that is The Bandit Queens by Parini Shroff.
Well, that we did it. Look at us.
We did it. We've got some great books here.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, we still have a couple of new releases to talk about. Yes. So many books coming out. We're heading into fall. We're getting so close. Oh, I'm so excited. Do you want me to start with my new release that I'm so excited about?
Yes, please do.
All right. So I wanted to pick something for Women in Translation Month, which is just around the corner. Women in Translation Month has been going on for almost a decade now, and it is focusing on women and translation. Since so few books are translated from other languages into English, there's even a smaller percentage of women. So this is supposed to highlight women in translation, which I believe was one of my first episodes here on Read or Dead last year. We did Women in Translation. So that was cool.
Yep. That would have been when I was on vacation, right after my air conditioner broke. We're full circle here.
We really are. So my pick is Urgent Matters by Paula Rodriguez. And this is translated from Spanish by Sarah Moses. And this is set in Argentina. So there is a train crash in the suburbs of Buenos Aires. And there are 43 people who died, and two of them have not been identified. At the same time, there's a guy who's on the run for murder, and he is on this train. And so he is trying to use this train wreck to his benefit. So now we have a detective, Dominguez, who is trying to find this criminal on the run. And just a lot of stuff is going on. This is out from Pushkin Vertigo. So very excited for this book, because it sounds amazing, right? Like a high stakes, almost like a movie quality kind of plot.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yeah, no, 100%.
Yeah, so very excited about that one. What's your pick for a new book release?
Well, this one, I guess, unintentionally, I guess, keeping up with the whole literary suspense thing, I picked this one because it's described as a read for fans of Donna Tartt and Tana French. Also, I was considering reading The Secret History by Donna Tartt for this episode, but I didn't because I knew I wouldn't be able to finish it because that book is going to require lots of, you know, savoring. Anyway, my book is called Kala by Colin Walsh. It's out this week, July 25th. So by the time you are listening to this, this will be out in bookstores. It takes place in Ireland on the West Coast, and you have these three friends who were part of an inseparable group as teenagers in the summer of 2003. And so there's Helen, Joe, Mush, and Kala. Kala was kind of like at the center of their friend group. And at the tail end of the summer, in the summer of 2003, Kala disappeared without a trace. So now it's 15 years later, and Helen is back in Ireland for her father's wedding. Joe is back in town as a world-famous musician. Mush never left town. He has just been working at his mother's cafe. And while they're there, human remains have been discovered in the woods, and two more girls have gone missing. And I think if you've read Ton of French before, you were probably seeing lots of shades of Ton of French here. Like, even before I saw that description, I was just kind of reading the synopsis, and I'm like, this is Ton of French. Holy cow. So it's past and present colliding, the group of estranged friends kind of coming together again and forcing to confront their own past and their own complicity in the events that led to Kala's disappearance. So yeah, this one was added to my list immediately, and I've got a couple of friends I need to text about this who are part of our Ton of French group. But yeah, the book is Kala by Colin Walsh.
Well, those are some great picks, and as always, they will all be linked in the show notes. Well, I guess that's our show. So thanks so much to everyone for listening. Thanks so much to our wonderful sound editor, Jen Zink. She always makes us sound wonderful. For show notes, you can head over to bookriot.com/listen. And for more book recommendations and bookish goodness, head over to bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out all of our podcasts at bookriot.com/listen. Or you can head over to your podcatcher and search Book Riot. If you would like to send us an email with feedback, show suggestions, or anything, talk to me about the, you know, subversive gardening folks, anything, you can reach us at redordead@bookriot.com. Otherwise, you can find me, Kendra, on Twitter. Or we're just going to keep calling it Twitter for now. On Twitter. And
it's Twitter. It's Twitter.
On Twitter and Instagram at KD, as in Dylan Winchester. And you find Katie on Twitter at KT_library lady. And we will talk to you all next time.
Bye.